Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview with Stephanie Shine, actor, director, producer of for many years of Shakespeare, and also the director of Forever Blonde, a one-woman homage to Marilyn Monroe, starring Sonny Thompson, whose interview you can hear next week. So in addition to the interview with Stephanie today, I'm playing two songs from Forever Blonde. You won't know you're not listening to Marilyn Monroe. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from
finding, discovering, uncovering, recovering any part of ourself which we have needed to hide. If you've been listening, you know that every week I say essentially the same thing, that we all learned early in our life that there were things about us, qualities that we had, behaviors, attitudes, reflexes, impulses, that just didn't go down well in our family of origin, or maybe in our school, or maybe with our peers. But someplace we got the powerful recognition that our silliness, or our seriousness, or our love of learning, or our whatever it is, didn't go down well. Other people reacted badly. We got a reaction that made us uncomfortable or scared us or made us sad or made us feel bad about ourselves. And so we learned in the way that children have, so flexible we are, to hide that quality. First we pretended it wasn't so, and then we got so good at it that we forgot it was so. And I believe, as a psychotherapist, that those qualities which we have to hide, they become more and more important to the life that we would like to live as we get older. And the circumstances in which they didn't work are no longer there. So it would be lovely if we could recover those things that we had to hide. And the Lynn Show is an attempt to stimulate everyone who's listening to think, what might I have hidden? Am I really a person who would like to reach out for help, even though I have spent most of my life taking care of myself and everybody else? Or am I a person who would actually like to be better able to take care of myself, although I have always been kind of dependent? Is there a quality that I would like to recover? And I have talked in other shows, and we'll talk again about how we hide these qualities, why it's useful to recover them, and what gets in the way of recovery. But the other thing I do is I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because in order to make your living or your life with an art, it has to be who you really are. It can't be something that you are pretending to be, because in this culture, we make it so difficult for people to dedicate a life to an art. And when you listen to the people that I interview, you hear over and over again the in-syncness with who they are and what they do, what we therapists call congruence, the congruence between who they are and what they do. You hear it over and over again. And in today's interview with Stephanie Shine, who is an actor, a director, a producer, and you'll hear all of those stories from Stephanie's own lips in a little while, you definitely hear the connection. Stephanie discovered her affection for, curiosity about, passion for theater, dance, music, acting, starting at 3 years old. You'll hear that story in a little bit. The other thing I want you to listen for is at the end of the interview, where Stephanie talks about the compulsion to do and be who she is, the calling, the mission. And you hear these words from a lot of people. And for me, of course, what that means is that that is a way of talking about this is me. And I play these interviews in the hope that when you hear it, the part of you that has been denied, hidden, I call that putting it under cover, will make itself a little known. And maybe you can begin to recover your own calling, your own mission, your own self. One of the things that Stephanie has done is she has directed Sunny Thompson in a one-woman show about Marilyn Monroe called Forever Blonde. And next week I'm playing my interview with Sunny. But one of the things I'm going to do in this show is play a couple of songs from the show Forever Blonde, and you can hear how much Sunny sounds like Marilyn, and I hope that that will pique your interest to hear next week's interview with Sunny as well. So before I play the interview with Stephanie, I'm going to play a song from Forever Blonde. This one is My Heart Belongs to Daddy, which is one of the songs that Marilyn did sing. And after that, I'm going to go right into my interview with Stephanie Shine. So here is Sunny Thompson as Marilyn Monroe singing My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
One day I met a William Morris agent at a Hollywood pool party in Palm Springs. It was at the pool. I was swimming in it. We were introduced and we had some drinks and talked. His name was John Hyde, but everyone called him Johnny because he was so friendly. He said I would become a very big star. While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy, but when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine Finnan Hattie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to my daddy. Da 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 da. Johnny Hyde, the big powerful agent, says I'm gonna be a big star. Ha! Well, I remember laughing and saying, it sure didn't look like it. I couldn't even make enough money to pay my telephone bill. But he said he had discovered Lana Turner, that I had more than Lana, and it was a cinch I would go far. Yeah, sure. But after he saw me in Love Happy with Groucho, he called my agent, bought out my contract, Johnny Hyde. Johnny Hyde had discovered Lana Turner. He turned Betty Hutton from a singer into a big film star, and he managed Rita Hayworth. And now he was going to be my agent. I didn't get a job for a long time after that, but Johnny said it was hard for a star to get an eating job. A star is only good as a star, that I didn't belong in anything else. Johnny told me he was discovering me. Ooh, that made me dizzy. Shook-a-dook-a-dook, shook-a-dook-a-dook, da-da. Yes, my heart belongs to my daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to my daddy. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, Johnny, Johnny, he was so wonderful. He believed in my talents. You're perfectly swell. Yes, my heart belongs to my daddy, 'cause my daddy, my daddy. The little old man just treats me so. That little old man just treats it so good.
I'm here with Stephanie Shine in a tiny little dressing room of the Oslo. And Stephanie is the director of Marilyn Blonde Forever.
Forever Blonde. Did you have a blonde moment?
Yes. Right. And here we are sitting here. Blondes. Right. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I am in the presence of one such, am I not?
You are.
I knew it. I knew it. Now, I know that you're directing, but I also know, because Sonny told me, that you're an actor.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So the art, I'm assuming, is theater.
Yes.
Yes? Okay. And I always ask the same question.
Sure.
And it is, how did it get started? What was the very first moment that you thought, oh, I'd like to be on stage, or oh, I'd like to make people laugh, or oh, this is nice when people listen to me, or I want to be a star, or I want to...
You know, it started so early, it's embarrassing.
No, it can't. No, yeah, good, tell me.
My mom took me to take dance classes, and when I was a little girl, and this was in San Diego, California, and I went to Linkletter as an art Linkletter, Totten Studios.
And how old is...
I'm 3 and a half.
Oh, my God.
3 and a half, 4. And it wasn't just dance class. You would sing and dance.
You know,
it wasn't just learning how to tap dance. You would sing I'm a Wacky Wind-Up, and that would be your performance piece. I still remember that song.
I'll bet you do.
And so I started to do this, and you'd perform at county fairs. Really? When you were teeny tiny, I remember singing Winchester Cathedral, having a little thing to Winchester Cathedral when I was six. I remember that.
So is it like too. Tap dance?
You tap and sing. It's more. It's like doing a musical comedy number.
Routine, right.
Right, the whole thing.
Right.
Like right out of the musical.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've never seen any other... you know, thing like that. I mean, now when I took my own children to dance class, there was no singing and dancing. It was just dancing. It
wow.
wasn't like performing like a musical.
But it
number.
Must have been so much fun.
Oh my gosh, it was great. And that's what started it. Plus, my mother took me to see plays. There were a lot of great plays coming into San Diego when I was a little girl. And
mm-hmm.
So I loved musicals. And then...
Do you remember anything you saw?
Yes, Peter Pan. Mm. Peter Pan was very big. You know?
Mary Martin has a lot to answer for in little girls wanting to go on the stage.
She does.
I know.
She does, and of course I never got to see her in it, but
I got
to see that, mm-hmm. you know, that version of it,
yeah,
that musical
right.
version of it, and fell quite madly in love with it, and then started doing theater at San Diego Junior Theater when I was about 10 or 11 years old.
Really?
And the time that I was there, I just have to brag on the folks I went to junior theater with. It was just this amazing period, and these kids were wildly talented. I must have been the least talented of them. They were wildly talented, and Brian Stokes Mitchell, who's a very big Broadway star now,
yeah. mm-hmm.
he was in Injun Joe when I was in the chorus. And Tom Sawyer, the nicest boy in the world.
Oh.
You know, our mothers were friends. There was just this group of kids that
mm-hmm.
moved through this high performance. You took classes and you performed in full-length musicals
wow.
year-round.
10, 11, 12, 13, like that.
Uh-huh. You started about 9 and you would go until you graduated high school, and I was
wow.
in that. I was in junior high when I started and went all the way through
okay,
high school.
Okay, so is it your feeling that this was something your mother wanted for you, or she just thought it would be fun for you, and so...
No, I was never pushed. I never had a stage mother. It just, a doctor said I had to take dance lessons because I had a wobbly ankle to strengthen my ankle.
Oh my goodness.
That and ice skating. And that started it. And then the big thing that my mother did was she took me to see the Zeffirelli film Romeo and Juliet when it came out, and I was a wee girl, and I fell desperately in love with Shakespeare.
Oh my
so I actually
goodness.
Spent most of my life in Shakespeare. I've spent the past 25 years with Shakespeare.
That has to be an unusual thing for a young child to fall. No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
No,
Well, I see it happen all the time because I produce Shakespeare primarily.
Do
That's
you?
What I do. Uh huh.
Well, okay. So take me back. So now
sure.
you're in junior high, you're in high school,
right?
And you're performing. You're a performer
nonstop,
right?
I'm, you know, performing
so,
at San Diego Junior Theater. I'm performing in high school.
Okay, was there ever a time when you said maybe I shouldn't do this or this is what I'm going to do, or it was sort of fait accompli, right? I mean, it was just,
absolutely.
This is what I am, this is what I do, this is what I will do.
Right, and I was supported, never pushed, but my mom was like, whatever makes you happy. And, you know, I also wanted to be a veterinarian and a theater artist, and I also wanted, you know, to have a ranch and be a theater artist.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were other interests, but always working in the theater
was
the major love. And I have been so fortunate because... it's been my life's work.
Well, okay, so,
yeah.
College?
Yes. Right out of high school, I went to the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco and did a summer program, and then I did a two-year pre-professional training program called at the Pacific Conservatory of Performing Arts, which in Santa Maria, California, and my first teachers were outrageously talented theater artists of great name now. They weren't then, but
mm-hmm.
they have made great names in themselves, just terrific artists. And then I auditioned for the League of Professional Training Programs.
What is that?
They aren't anymore. There used to be this league of 10 professional actor training programs, and primarily they were MFA programs,
mm-hmm.
but a few of them were BFA programs. It's Juilliard, Yale, North Carolina
yeah,
School
yeah.
of the Arts, University of Washington, American Conservatory Theater, San Francisco. And I got into several of the schools and chose University of Washington. Because I had once seen an actor from there who was just brilliant. I thought, I want to learn how to do what he did. So I went up there and graduated from the PATP, as we affectionately call it. It's a program that is still very well known today.
Wow.
And then I went to Ashland. I went to the Oregon Shakespearean Festival, which is the largest Shakespeare festival in America.
Going on right now.
Yeah. I was there for 2 years. and then went to New York, and then came back to Seattle, and I had a fine career in New York. I can the weather was hard for me, being from the West Coast.
Ah,
the humidity was a little tough.
Yeah.
So I left and went back to Seattle and got married and started working at the Seattle Shakespeare Company.
And so this is a bit of a departure then.
Well, it is. It is in a way. It's so funny because it's a departure for the for Thompson Productions as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's not the kind of normal thing they do. So when they were looking for a director, they asked their casting director, who also is a theater person and an actress, what theater directors do you know? And because I was in school with her husband, she said, well, you should, one of the people you should talk is to is Stephanie. She runs the Shakespeare Company in Seattle, and it's something I've recently stepped down from. So I interviewed with Sunny. It was like a blind date, the two of us meeting in a coffee house, you know.
Oh, my God.
And within an hour, we were both kind of smitten with each other, and then we started working on this play. That was a long time. That was 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yes.
So you don't do this play all the time, though?
I don't. My work is primarily was in the year that we formed it. And then that we put it up.
Right. You got it up on its feet.
Right. So I shaped it.
Right.
And staged it.
Right.
And coached Sunny through the acting.
Right.
So that was my job directorially. But what I do is I get to come and see it and give notes.
Yes, of course.
Or else Sunny will call me and say, oh my gosh, I'm having trouble with this moment.
Yeah, right.
Because since she's been running the play now for it's 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? We opened 4 years ago. You know, she has done hundreds of performances of it.
Yeah.
But we still keep wanting to grow within the performance itself and never have it be rote or never have it settle.
Right.
I mean, that's the type of artist that we both are. We do that's how we operate. We just want to get better, get deeper. And so we continue to fiddle and change. And if I can't come out and see the play, she'll tape it for me. And then we'll go to her house when she's back in Seattle. And we will sit with popcorn and glasses of wine. And we will watch moments and I will take notes. And then I'll go, okay, let's try this and this next time. And you know, we study it.
That's amazing.
It's a really great way to work, actually.
It's a great way to work. And I don't think it's that common.
I don't know. I don't know any. This is so beyond my normal experience of rehearsing a play for 4 to 5 weeks.
Yeah, you get it up and it runs whatever it runs,
right.
And then it's over.
Exactly.
Right.
I've never done a one-person show before, so you can imagine the rehearsal. I mean, it was really for a long time just her and I and Kristen, her stage manager, the three of us in a room. For a year, a year, meeting three times a week as we developed this.
Well, it must have been wonderful, though.
Well, it was, in the American theater, you don't have time like that.
Right.
I suppose when you're developing a play for Broadway, you have much more time to rehearse. I mean, look at poor Spider-Man.
It
had forever to rehearse and preview that
level. Right.
But usually you're not afforded this time. It felt very, very Russian. Very Tchaikovian, Stanislavski.
It's the real thing.
Yes, we
right,
have
this is months. What theater, right,
months
this is what theater is for.
Right, this
really
about relationship
right.
development,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
It was really extraordinary. And at the end of it, we not only have this piece that we are so intimate with, but we developed the best of friendships.
I'll bet you did.
It's uncanny.
No. Okay. So now, she told me that... that you almost played Marilyn in After the Fall?
I did. This was...
How ironic is that?
It was wild. And it was so funny because it was a play that I dearly loved and I'd always been attracted to Marilyn. And I was cast. And I couldn't believe it. I worked so hard and I was cast in this. It was at a theater called Bellevue Repertory Theater, which is a suburb of Seattle, Washington. And right before I went into rehearsal, the theater folded.
Oh, God!
And I had done all my prep work. I was so looking forward to it. And I just sunk into the deepest depression.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, art interruptus.
Yeah.
You do all this
How
work.
Can this be fair?
Oh,
it can't be fair. Right?
I know. I was so ready to go into the dark.
But.
And into the light.
Yeah. But all of that, right. It wasn't about that. It was about this.
Right. I just didn't know it at the time.
Well, you never do.
No. Isn't it funny? You look and you go, oh, I did get to
you know, Soul Time with Marilyn. It all worked out. Yeah. My dreams are coming true. They just look a little different
than I expected them to. Right. I get to use all that stuff.
Absolutely.
That I, right?
And one of the things that bonded us right away, the two of us, was our basic ideology about Marilyn. We wanted to honor her. We wanted to uplift her.
Yes.
You know, always treating her with great love and the awareness that anytime Sunny takes the stage, there's an opportunity for a whole new generation of people to know her,
yeah.
and people who have known her through her movies or films and have missed her,
uh-huh.
to have an opportunity to spend more time with her again, that we were trying to honor her always. We both are very big fans of her work and admiring of who she was as a woman.
Yeah, and all of that comes across in the.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah,
really,
all of it does. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And also, I think, you know, when you say people who have known her, nobody knows her, you know, the way you know her after you see the piece.
Right. Probably not in living memory.
No. Well, I mean, even those of us who saw her movies and stuff, there's all this information
right.
in the play that you wouldn't know.
Right, and you get to experience a journey with her.
Exactly, exactly.
And understand, you know, where she came from and what happened within her life and what she orchestrated and what she didn't, you know. But we also wanted to make sure that Marilyn was never a victim, because neither of us believed that.
No, I think that's right. Although, she was at the mercy of the legacy of her childhood.
That's a very good point.
But you know what
She's
I mean.
She's the product of...
That's
of,
right. What happened to her?
She was raised as an orphan for the most part. Her poor mama
right.
was such a mess.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
and we're all that.
Well, we all get to carry that with us, and
that's right.
hopefully make the best of it.
Right. And so, it's perhaps not accurate to say that she was a victim of her childhood, but she was. Well, I want to say it again. You know, it's at the mercy of what happened to her, and that's there the whole time.
Yeah.
You know,
you're right. It is.
You know this. I suppose in the interest of complete disclosure, to say I'm a therapist.
So you're looking for those things.
Well, I am.
Of course.
Yeah. Right. I am. Right. So I mean, right. And I'm fond of telling people, you know, you're never going to be someone who didn't have your history.
That's right. We take it with us.
We take it. There's nothing. We don't amputate our history.
No.
There's a lot of stuff we can do to make up for our history, but we can't get rid of it. It's right there.
And she died at such an early age. She didn't have a chance, really, to be at peace with any of it. You know
no.
how when life grants you more time, and also. And I don't know if you have, I don't know what, you know, I don't, we haven't, we've just met. But but when you're gifted with a family of procreation, it can make up a lot with your family of origin.
Yes,
and Marilyn,
that's correct.
She tried and tried,
and it never happened for her.
No, and if that could have,
yes, a lot could have been different, that's right.
You know, because you can heal so much.
Yes.
And she never got the opportunities, when I look at her life, to heal the way she needed to.
No,
she
I think
never
that's right.
felt loved enough. Never, you know, oh, what a horrible feeling.
Yeah, right.
To be the most adored woman in
right.
the world.
Right, talk about disconnect, right?
And not feel loved.
Right.
Not for, but she never felt loved, you know, for herself.
No,
for who
right,
she was.
Right, and that's, but given that, she really did all one could do with that.
Do you know what I mean? She took care of herself in
wonderful
ways. Yes, she
did. As much as it was possible for a person
Absolutely.
To do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, so you come to the performances and you stay in touch with it, but it's not your life. So what else are you doing?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you mean just in my whole world or
well,
just
in terms of your theater, in terms of your career?
I just ended 18 years with the Seattle Shakespeare Company, which
oh my God.
Is a company I'm really proud of. And my last day was actually June 30th. So, I mean, literally,
wow.
just finished. And what I'm doing now, I am working in three different capacities
to give myself some flexibility because I had twins 10 months ago.
Oh, my dear.
Oh, my God. I have twin boys, and my husband is the artistic director of the Tennessee Shakespeare Company in Memphis. So I've left the Seattle Shakespeare Company
so
I can spend more time with my family.
Right.
And I can work these fun new things that I'm so excited about, I can't believe. And also devote some time to my family.
Oh, my God, and twins. I mean, I have twin grandkids. I know they are just, I mean, it's so much work. Oh, my God, I can't believe you're actually here. and your husband is there with the two of them.
Right. Yes, right. I love them. I find it to be so much fun. I think two's definitely the way to go.
Yes, absolutely.
Way fun.
Absolutely.
Way, it's a party.
Absolutely.
Every day's a party.
So what is it that you're doing?
So what I'm doing, I am now the artistic director of Shakespeare Walla Walla.
Oh, Walla Walla, Washington.
That's exactly right. Which I love that you know that it's in Walla Walla. But it's really, you know, it's always so much fun to say, isn't it?
Yeah, Walla Walla, Washington.
Walla Walla, Washington. It's way fun to say.
Yes, right.
What has just happened there is we have just opened a brand new theater called the Powerhouse Theater, and it's in a 120-year-old brick edifice that was once a powerhouse.
Oh, wow.
And when I walked into it 2 years ago, I looked at it, and the executive director of Shakespeare Walla Walla said, "Don't you think we could have a theater in here?" And I went, "We can't just have a theater. We can have a Blackfriars." And the Blackfriars was the indoor theater that Shakespeare performed in the early 1600s.
Wow.
And it has a specific kind of wraparound that follows the Elizabethan configuration. So I'll be darned if they didn't go and build me a Blackfriars theater in Walla Walla. And so I also have a 1,200-seat amphitheater to work with in the summertime. So we are going to make Shakespeare Walla Walla a destination for Shakespeare on top of its already magnificent wine destination. Which it is. I don't know if you know this, but
no, Walla Walla, I didn't know.
Walla Walla has 145 wineries.
Oh my God.
It is the wine capital of Washington.
Wow.
And extraordinary wines are there. So you go to Walla Walla, Washington. Town's so nice, they named it twice, as we like to say. And it is so sophisticated with all of these people who have moved to Walla Walla, which is a lovely farming community, beautiful, beautiful fields and pastures and wonderful soil. And now there are these 145 wineries. So there are poplar trees that are sort of pretending to be cypresses everywhere and dotting the landscapes. And so you can close your eyes and go, oh, I'm really in Italy. I'm in Tuscany now.
So what drew you to
Shakespeare Walla Walla?
Yeah, I mean, what were you doing? What were you doing there?
I had never been there, and I've been in Washington State for 25 years. I'd never been to Walla Walla because it's on the southeast corner of the state on the Oregon border. Never had any reason to go to Walla Walla. Until one of my dear friends, and he was on my board of directors at Seattle Shakespeare Company, he and his incredible powerhouse of a wife went over there, fell in love with the wineries and the whole wine life, and bought a home there. And they said, Shakespeare should come to Walla Walla. So we thought, okay, well, let's check it out. And I checked it out. I said, you're right.
Wow.
We should be coming to Walla Walla. So we started bringing one of our Seattle Shakespeare Company shows there just for a week in the summertime. And this year, we're bringing two of the Seattle Shakespeare Company shows there to run 2 weeks, and we're producing our own show as Shakespeare Walla Walla in the Powerhouse. So I've got a mini festival. I've got three plays going within 2 weeks, and then next year we'll expand it. We've got we're opening with Macbeth outdoors, and then the day after that opens, we open indoors with Swan Song, which is a relatively new play by Patrick Page, who is a Walla Walla Whitman College alum. Oh, that's hard to say.
Yes, it is.
And of greater note, he's now playing the Green Goblin in Spider-Man on Broadway. He's a big Broadway star and a wonderful Shakespearean actor. He's written this incredible play about William Shakespeare and his friendship and rivalry with Ben Jonson, who was a playwright who lived at the same time he did. And about the publication of the Folio, which is how we ended up with 18 plays of Shakespeare's that we would have lost had the Folio not been printed. And it recounts their friendship and gives audiences an opportunity to spend time with William Shakespeare, the man, in a similar way.
I was just going to say.
Marilyn gives you an opportunity to spend time with Marilyn, the woman.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It's
so
great.
If you like Shakespeare or have been curious about Shakespeare, it's such a fun and heartwarming, and it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a dramedy, you know,
yeah, yeah.
Comic, but,
mm-hmm.
but
right, I got
heart-rending
it.
Too.
Right. Kind of like our play, and it's just a great place. We're going to open that indoors in the Powerhouse in that Elizabethan configuration, which I'm so excited about, and then we'll close the next week with Comedy of Errors. Oh, so lovely.
It's a really fun first real festival season, so it's the debut.
And when is this?
It opens, all opens on August 3rd.
Oh, my
for
God.
For 2 weeks.
My God.
Shakespeare Walla Walla.
So now you're producing.
I am producing.
Are you directing?
Yes, I'm directing Swan Song. And actually, I've been an artistic director. I just finished my 13th year with Seattle Shakespeare as artistic director. And that's my great love, is really growing a company.
Right, right, right.
And making, I mean, that way you get to do it, have a
yes,
bit of
right.
at all. And I still act. I mean, I love that as well. And I think that directors who are actors, I think you have to get back on stage because it's so humbling. Just so humbling. You
yeah.
go, yep, I remember. I remember
oh,
how hard
how this is.
Yeah.
yeah.
So it keeps your appreciation.
Keeps you honest.
It does keep you honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder, and I've been directed by fabulous directors who are not actors, but I always wonder.
Yeah.
If you only knew.
It's actually like being a therapist who's never been in therapy.
Exactly.
Please, I don't want to go to a therapist who has never been on the other side.
That's exactly, you know, the way I work in my career.
Right.
So I'm doing that, and then I'm also working with my husband's company. So I will continue to work on his education program, which it's in Memphis, and so there is a great need for this, and there's no real professional theater in Memphis. There are some wonderful non-professional companies, but this is my husband's company. It's the first union company, the
wow.
first actors' equity company in Memphis, and the education program. I mean, we have an opportunity to really change some lives for the good, which is what we want to do. We want to make art central to their education, because we know that art saves lives.
Yes.
And so that's what we're looking to do in the second most violent city in America.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's Memphis. What's the most?
Might be Detroit. I don't know. We should look that up. I have no idea, but I know we're second.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very violent city. And a lot of the youth have no place to go. And
you know, it's funny. I was just listening. I didn't hear very much of it on NPR this morning. In some prison, there is this woman who is has cast the inmates in Hamlet, and because they can't congregate for long enough to do the whole play, she's doing I can't remember if it's a scene at a time or
mm-hmm.
an act at a time. It's taking 4 years.
Oh my goodness!
To do the play.
Wow.
Right, and of course they're talking about the impact
yeah.
on these really pretty hardened criminals, right, of learning and doing Shakespeare.
Oh.
And they've got 4 Hamlets because
oh,
it's sorry. Too much for any one guy to do the whole thing. So these guys are all 4 on stage doing, trading off the lines. And the guy who was narrating it says that these guys have been working together for this 4 years and they call themselves the Hamlets. And whenever they can, they get together, the 4 of them, and they work on, you know, they trade off, right, their parts. And in a way, it's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Well, Shakespeare has been used very successfully in several prisons.
Yes, I heard it before.
Yeah,
this must be another new
Well, I haven't version. Heard this
Me
one.
Me either.
But there's a wonderful documentary called Shakespeare Behind Bars that Kurt Toflin, late of Kentucky Shakespeare, spent his whole career working in the prisons.
Yeah.
There's so many folks who work in the prisons.
Yes.
And we actually, in Walla Walla, we have our maximum security prison right there. So once we're ready, we'll probably branch into that work as well, because Shakespeare saves lives.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it's just, I was in an improvisational theater troupe many, many, many years ago, and we did one performance in a prison. Our audiences not only chose the topic for the improvs, but if they wanted, they came on stage. And in the prison, pretty much everybody on stage was in the prison population. We mostly watched.
Wow.
And they improvised. They took the roles of the warden and the guards. I mean, it was unbelievable.
I'd be afraid of that. I'm going to have to look. You know, the idea of working in the prisons is a
Yeah, well, I mean, that was it. That was the first and last time I did it.
Was it scary? Were you frightened?
And I was so young. You know, I don't think I was. I don't think I was. I don't remember being frightened. I remember being stunned by the accuracy of the portrayals.
Wow.
That, you know, how good they were. That's what I remember most.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right. So, I talk about a diversion. Well, all right. Mostly, I ask, and we've really been talking about it, but is there anything that I haven't asked you or that hasn't come up or that you would want to say about what it's like to have devoted an entire life, and we are talking here about an entire life.
We are.
Yes. To the pursuit of this art.
Well, I mean, there are some things that, let me think, I don't know if I can answer that one directly if there's any you haven't asked, but there are a couple of things that I could share.
Please.
That. Okay. I really do think it's a calling.
Yeah.
I think that it's one of those things that you are compelled to do. And you know about the compulsion years later.
You mean in retrospect?
Right, because so many people want to work in the arts, and they should want to work in the arts. I understand that, but you go through years and they drop out. They drop out for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Some wildly talented people no longer work in the theater.
Right.
People whose work I miss and mourn for have chosen other avenues now. So perhaps that compulsion didn't continue with them.
Right.
For those of us who, you know, do 30, 40 years and more in the theater, the compulsion never goes away. And it becomes less, you know, in the early part, I think it's about yourself. I think that it's about the experience that you have.
I need to,
how it feels to be on stage, how it feels, I'm looking for those transcendent moments. I remember, you know, when you're lucky as an actor, there will be these moments that come where you transcend and you're no longer aware of yourself. You're just in the moment and that's happening. It's as if you are the funnel and the words are just coming and your cognizance of yourself disappears for a moment. Just a moment.
It's great.
It's so beautiful. I remember the first time that happened to me, I was in a production of Glass Menagerie, and I was playing Laura. I was 21 years old. And it was like, whoa, like my head had just been taken off my whole shoulders. It was gone. And you live for those transcendent moments. They are few and far between. Maybe if you ever get one, you're so, so lucky. But as you continue in the work and you evolve, it no longer becomes about yourself. And Stanislavski had this great quote, you know, love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art.
I'll say it again. Slowly.
Love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that you realize that you are indeed,
this sounds so woo-woo, so I apologize. I'm really a very grounded woman.
You're a vessel, and it's your service.
Yeah.
And your job is to serve the play, and to serve the playwright's intent so that it serves your audience. Because all that matters is that audience.
It's coming through you to them.
Right. It's not about them liking you. It's about giving them the experience they deserve, that they need. We need as community. You know, we need to come gather together and tell communal stories. We have to look at primal stories again and again and re-examine them as groups, and we have to do it together, and you don't get to do that very much in our society. You know, we have sporting events, and then we experience something as a group. But, and when you're in a movie, that even that isn't quite the same, you know, because, yeah, your fellow audience members may be experiencing something with you, but it's not real what's happening in front of you.
Right.
Whereas in the theater, we're all in the room and we're all doing it together.
And it's real what's happening in front of you.
It's our life. It's never coming back. We're not getting those moments back. Those 2 hours.
No, I don't mean that. I mean those people up there are actually real.
That's right. They're real.
They're real.
And this is the real time of our life.
Right.
You know, if we watch Brad Pitt in a movie, that's not his real life anymore. He already spent those hours doing that.
Right.
He's doing something else, having his real life. But Sunny is Marilyn. Every night she's out there spending her life with you.
That's
you know,
right.
There's
that's
something
right.
that's so servicing about that.
And we need to provoke the conversation. We need to provoke higher thinking in one another. And we need to have these experiences. So to tie it all back in, I have loved in my life and been so fortunate to be aware of that evolution from it being about me and being all about service. It's a ministry now.
Yeah.
It's a ministry.
That's a great place to stop. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
It was great. My pleasure.
Okay, so you heard it. If you were listening earlier in the show, I talked about what Stephanie was going to say towards the end of the show. And she, of course, did. She talked about the compulsion to do what she does, the mission, the calling, the significance to her life of this work, that this is who she is. And she makes the point, which I think is kind of interesting, that the people who are drawn to this but who don't have the compulsion, what she's calling the compulsion, aren't able to stay. They have to leave. They have to do something else. They have to give it up, however much they enjoy it, however talented they are. And you know, she may be right about that, but how I see it is that when she talks about it, what she's saying is what so many of the artists I have interviewed have said, and not just theater artists, not just actors and directors, but writers and singers and fine artists and architects, dancers. They all say essentially the same thing. Some have said, it's in my DNA. I couldn't do anything else. I don't know what else I would do if I don't do this. It was always like this. I came in with it. I came in doing it. Even those people for whom it came as a surprise, they didn't mean to do it, and I have interviewed a lot of people like that, once they found it, they were compelled. And that is speaking from a very deep sense of, I know who I am. I am demonstrating who I am. It occurs to me that I haven't said that I don't mean that everybody has to be an artist and that you have to find the artist in you. That is not at all what I mean. One can be oneself and do virtually anything. It is being in sync with oneself, not being at odds with oneself, not feeling what a lot of people say, you know, I'm a fraud. If you really knew me, you wouldn't like me, that thing. Not being, oh, I wish I were, any number of things. It doesn't matter what it is. That you are okay with who you are and that you are who you are. It's not rocket science. It's clear that when you are not being all of who you are, when you are not demonstrating who you really are, that takes a lot of energy to suppress whatever it is you're suppressing. So there are things you can't do simply because you don't have the energy to do them. But not only that, there's such an amazing sense of comfort when you are who you are. You just have to take my word for it. And of course, I'm going to talk so much more about this in the coming shows. But right now, I want to play another song from Marilyn, Forever Blonde. This is Sunny Thompson, whose congruence you will hear next week, singing Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, one of Marilyn's famous songs. And, why don't I just play that? Here it is now.
I got the part in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Jane Russell, she was the brunette. I was the blonde. She got paid $200,000 a week for it, and I got my $500 a week, and that to me, you know, was considerable. She, by the way, was quite wonderful to me. The only thing was I couldn't get a dressing room. The studio kept saying, "Remember, you're no star." I finally said, "Well, whatever I am the blonde, and this is Gentlemen Prefer Blondes." the French are glad to die for love. They delight in fighting duels. But I prefer a man who lives and gives expensive jewels. A kiss on the hand may be quite continental, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. A kiss may be grand, but it won't pay the rental on your humble flat or help you at the automat. Men grow cold as girls grow old, and we all lose our charms in the end. But square cut or pear shape, these rocks don't lose their shape. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Tiffany's, Cartier, Black Star, Ross Gore. Talk to me, Harry Winston, tell me all about it. There may come a time when a lass needs a lawyer, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. There may come a time when a hard-boiled employer thinks you're awful nice, but get that ice or else no dice. He's your guy when stocks are high, but beware when they start to descend. It's then that those louses go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. I've heard of affairs that are strictly platonic, but diamonds are a girl's best friend. And I think affairs that you must keep lasonic are better bets. If little pets get big baguettes, time rolls on, and youth is gone, and you can't straighten up when you bend. But stiff back or stiff knees, you stand straight at Tiffany's. Diamonds, diamonds. I don't mean rhinestones, 'cause diamonds are a girl's best.
So I'm sure that that has whet your appetite for listening to my interview with Sunny Thompson, who is Marilyn in Forever Blonde next week. And also, if you want to see the show, to get yourself to Walla Walla, Washington, and see some of Stephanie Shine's beginnings at her new Shakespeare company and the Powerhouse. So I'm about out of time here, but I need to say yet again that if you are interested in hearing this interview again, or any of the interviews that I have done over the years, remembering that I have interviewed only people who make their living or their life within art, and some of these interviews are quite amazing, they're all on my website. They're all podcasts on my website. And you can get to my website by typing in thelynnshow.com. That's thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, because there are the other The Lynn Shows, believe it or not. Okay, so if you went up on my website, one of the things you could do is listen to the podcasts of the earlier shows, see some of the photographs and videos that accompany those podcasts. Also, you could find out about the book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. That is where pretty much everything I say about cover, undercover, why we have to pretend to be someone we're not. So information about the book and the workbook that goes with it and the audiobook that could also go with it are all up on the website. Also, gosh, I don't remember whether I said that I'm in private practice, and my entire practice is on the telephone now. So I talk to people all over the country and occasionally all over the world. And if you're interested in psychotherapy, if you're interested in what it's like to do psychotherapy on the phone, I wrote an article about it called Psychotherapy on the Go, and you can get that, of course, at the website as well. So if you want to know anything about me, or you want to hear any of the past shows, interviews, that's the place to go. And also, it is the place to go to find Josh Hackney, who, if you listen to my show, you hear every week me telling you that Josh Hackney is the guy when it comes to recording, engineering, computer stuff. He just created a new computer for me. And not only did he create this new computer for me, but he has to come and show me things that are new in it that I didn't know. So if you are somebody who wants to do some recording, if you are somebody who has some concerns about your computer, if there's something you want to know about computers, then you want Josh. And you can also get him at my website, thelinshow.com. You click on email me and ask me to find you Josh or anything else you want that I can get you. And I will. And as always, I hope that you heard something you can use in this show today. Something that interested you, something that amused you, something that entertained you, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, oh, you see my face and figure, I've both seen better days. I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight, no, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I flee? Get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got good.